Hey, here we are.
All right. It's first of all, let's thank you for joining us again. It's like we never go away.
No, we're here a lot.
Yeah, yeah. And we just keep coming back, and you keep coming back to listen to us. So thanks again for joining Dewey and myself, Patrick.
Yep, that's Patrick over there. I'm Dewey, as previously mentioned. And that is all the information we have for you this week. The rest is going to be 45 minutes of silence.
Okay, I have to say something.
Please, go ahead.
Yeah, I can't just go. All right. So, I mean, let's just dive into why I'll never make it.
I'd like to hear this.
Now, this one's kind of conceptual. So Dewey, go with me on this.
I'm going.
I will never make it because I want to do everything.
Holy shit.
Yeah. Yeah. Like I'm that person. I am that person. Your face is astonished and in amazement because...
We've chosen the same thing this
what?
Week.
Okay, just so you know, listeners, we never talk about what we're going to talk about.
No.
Like we have our segments, and we just kind of come up with our own thing. But so this week, we've chosen the exact same thing.
Look, I like to think about it ahead of time. So I actually had written mine down, but he started.
Yeah, I wrote mine down.
Patrick started, and by God, it is exactly what I wrote down.
Yeah.
I'll never make it. Please go. You go ahead, but just know that we are in the same place right now.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. So what I mean by I want to do everything is the fact that, yes, I have a certain voice type. I have a certain, you know, I present a certain image going into in a room and on stage. But I still have, you know, I may be quote unquote leading man type, but I want to do character work. I want to do funny, goofy stuff. Mm-hmm. I want to, as well as the dramatic, as well as, you know, songs that are comedic, songs that are, you know, heart wrenching. And all of the above. And so I want to do everything. However, when I walk into a room, they see one thing.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, he's tall. He's got this look, and he
can, handsome. He wanted to say handsome there, and he turned it into he's got this look. He's a handsome man. He's a handsome man. That's all.
Right. And so I'm that leading man type, and that's when I walk into a room, that's what they see, and so I think that can limit sometimes what they think I can do or bring into her. And so those moments when I get to be a silly character, whether it's wearing a wig or a mustache, and I get to do accents, you know, different things like that.
Oh, an accent.
Yeah, yeah. A good old, like my favorite one that I've done is a Hungarian accent. How Hungarian it really was, I'll just leave that for
okay, because Hungarian is a specific Eastern European accent.
Okay, Dewey, I'm going to need you to not call out my accent. I basically just did Eastern European.
Yeah.
But
you did not do Hungarian, is what you're trying to say.
What I'm saying,
you might have occasionally said a word in a Hungarian accent in your attempt.
What I'm saying is that if there was a dish served, it would have Hungarian spices on it, but the dish itself may not actually be Hungarian. Yes, that's what I'm saying. But yeah, to do stuff like that. For example, and clear case in point of this is that I was auditioning for both the Broadway run and then ultimately for the tour of Peter and the Starcatcher.
Okay.
Now, love the show. I mean, just like gaga head over heels for the show. And so I was like, okay, I have to do this. And the role I want, Black Stash.
Right.
Very character-y.
But also,
I think leading man, even though he's kind of the villain and goofy, but it requires a certain presence.
Yeah.
And so I'm like, oh, come on, I can do this. And so I get in there. All of the casting people that I was ever in front of, they were like, great job, good. They loved it, and they loved the work that I did. I had fun with the sides that I was given because he's just this goofy oddball of a villain. And then I get in front of the director, and it went nowhere. I was like, no. And then, you know, so that was for the Broadway. Then I came in for the tour again. Casting loved me, but then no from the director. So then, like months later, I happened to be backstage, and the director was Roger Reese. And so I happened to be backstage, and so he happened to be there, and I just went up to him. I said, hi, I'm Patrick. I don't know if you remember me, but we've seen each other. It's like, oh, yes, I remember. You're in for Peter. You're too tall. That's what he told me. Like that. So that is why I wasn't even considered. Not because I couldn't sing it. I couldn't act it. I didn't have the character. You're just too tall.
Yeah. Too tall, too handsome.
I mean, so
there. What a world for this guy.
What a world. It's a tough world. Well, I've got the knots on the top of my head to prove how tough being tall is.
Hey, man, we're about some height, and I've got plenty of knots up there myself. Yeah, I hear you.
Okay, but you too want to do everything.
I'm honestly glad you went down the path you went down, because mine is not what you're talking about.
Okay.
Although I should be cast in every role because of my abilities. That's not necessarily my desire. My desire is to do all things, not just acting.
Oh, okay.
Not just performing, but I would love to climb Mount Kilimanjaro. I'm a little afraid of heights and not particularly fit, so it's probably a bad idea. But
the idea of it.
People are doing it. I'm a person, so I should do it too.
Listeners, he is a person.
Look,
I've been with him for all these episodes, and there is no doubt of your personage.
Yeah, as much as Patrick is tall, dark, and handsome, I am a person. And I would love. Kilimanjaro. I'm not going to say it won't happen, but
we'll just say that's a pie in the sky.
But
get it?
But honestly, you know, okay. I had a day job that I left recently that I'd had for a number of years, and I gotta say it was a tough job. It was a job that required some training and a whole new set of skills that I had never even thought to acquire before. And it was hard. It was a difficult job. It was a difficult way of sort of dealing with people and numbers and all kinds of stuff like that. And I loved it. And I find myself today, because I just left the job in November, I find myself today, a couple of months later, missing it. And
as tough as it was, and as kind of like right brain, left brain, as you kind of had to make it.
Yeah, you know? but I was succeeding at it. Right, I was.
Well, that always helps.
I had this thing that I was like improving and succeeding at, and it just stopped one day because I booked a show. Like, knock on wood that I should do that again, but I had to leave the day job to go and do the show, and I find myself missing that challenge, that non-performance related challenge. Now I find plenty of challenges in the performance arena, and that it's enough to sustain me. It honestly is, but. You know, if the concept of going back and doing some catering or, you know, a reception or something like that right this second, and these are jobs that are needed and noble jobs in and of themselves, they don't challenge the brain a great deal. They're really, they just need a human being to accomplish this task so that this operation can run smoothly. I like being a part of that as well, but it's not a challenge. It doesn't ask anything of me other than just my brute strength, of which there is plenty.
A plenty.
But I that is an example of Kilimanjaro. Meaning, if I decided, you know what, screw heights, I got this, and I wanted to climb Kilimanjaro, then I would work at it. And I would want to achieve that thing. And I'm going to die someday, and sure, there's reincarnation, but I won't remember this life, and there is reincarnation, so we're clear.
Just so you know.
That's what this podcast is about.
It's now a fact.
There is
reincarnation. I'll never make it in this life.
Yeah.
Right.
That I won't remember this life, and I would like to achieve as much as possible. I will be president someday. You're welcome, America.
but you know what, Dewey?
Yeah.
There's a reason why we're still here. So I think it's best that you go first this time, because I went first last time and there was a weird on the same page moment. So let's see if it happens again.
I'm going to tell you why I'm still here. Because I have found what we do to be important to humanity.
Okay, that is not mine.
I just came from this day job where I was really accomplishing some great things, but for a corporation and for a very small segment of the population within that corporation to improve their bottom line by a small margin. Now, it was an enormous amount of money to me because I'm poor, but it was a very small amount of money to the corporation, and I was making an improvement on it, but so what? Who cares? Whereas when I do even the smallest thing within this profession, especially in the theater, where it's a group effort, we are taking a piece of art and working as a community to build this piece of art, to present to other people who need to consume art, because I'm like them. I want to consume art. I need to learn about humanity and my capacity as a person. Mm-hmm.
And what we can contribute to that humanity,
yeah,
as individuals.
Look, I work for a company called Story Pirates, a children's theater company. We teach kids how to write stories, and then we go in and we turn those stories into little sketches and musicals and stuff. And it's so low rent. Like, I went yesterday in a t-shirt that says Story Pirates on it, and at one point in time, I put on a very dirty wig to play a dinosaur who was clumsy and lived in a city, but needed to leave that city because he was just so uncomfortable running into things and burping fire on things all over and over again.
See,
and
this is the kind of character work I want to do.
Yeah, this came from the children, and I watched each one of those children after this little 45-minute, 50-minute thing we did get up from their bottoms, because they were just sitting on the floor in a gymnasium,
right?
And be pumped, like literally, like yelling over each other about what their stories were going to be as they walked back to their classroom to go and write something from their own brain. Like that, that impact, as simple as that was, is enormous. Because I didn't have that when I was a kid. I didn't have that growing up. No one asked me to write a story. I think my mother asked me to write a story once, but like I would love to have had that opportunity. And I don't know. What we do is impactful, and I can't stop doing it because I feel very much like I shouldn't. Like it would be the wrong thing for me to do to stop doing it.
Yeah. And now mine is not exactly yours, but it is in the same ballpark in the fact that I'm still here because of Hope.
Hope?
Hope.
Who's she?
Yeah, she's this beautiful, beautiful creature I just met the other night. But Hope is, I mean, there's certainly my individual, wow, let's try that word, individualistic.
Indolisp?
Right, indolisp-ic Hope.
Don't worry, we'll cut that out. That'll be cut out. No one will ever hear that.
Oh, please, everyone's going to hear this. Anyway.
You need some water?
As an individual.
Let's okay, just say there it is.
As an individual, I certainly have my own hope of making Broadway, of you know, making it as, you know, that's the whole point of this podcast, is for us to make it.
Yeah.
But apart from that, I'm still here because of the hope of kind of finding my place, kind of like what you were talking about of making an impact, and the hope of making my own statement of finding my place of, you know what, whether it's on Broadway, whether it's this other show, whether it's another different, you know, maybe I'll get into coaching, maybe I'll get into directing, you know, all these other avenues, as well as like, if you know, there's always that question, if you weren't performing, what would you do? And my go-to is always lawyer. I would be a lawyer. You know, and law is like a big interest of mine. But piggyback with that is also financial planning. So I would love to do those kind of things. Both are very helpful in their own right to other people. And so there's a way I can do all of that. You know, I can teach actors how to better budget. I can teach actors contracts or whatever it is. But there's different ways to utilize the brain that I got in so many different ways that it's not being used, and believe me, it goes unused a lot. And so there's a lot of room for it to be used. So it's that hope of finding my place, and you know, kind of as you were saying, give back, contribute back to humanity and the world.
But that's
we are such lofty people.
We tackle the big issues on this podcast. You world listening, you're welcome. But what I'd like to know,
yes,
is it just me? So, is it just me?
Yeah.
Or does your hair, facial hair, eyebrows, like the utility of that for agents, casting directors, producers, like they exert so much control over what it is that I can do with my hair. And I'm like, hey man, hey, leave it be.
So what do you want to do with it that you're not able to do with it?
I don't know. Like, I like a buzz cut. like sure Full Metal Jacket.
I'm sure you look,
you know what I mean? Like you rudely get held down in a chair while someone scrapes your scalp clean.
Why not?
And I love that, but I can't walk around like that. I don't like combing my hair. Guest came in and I put a hat on.
You did?
Because I was like, oh, okay, I'm going to put a hat on.
But he didn't have a hat on before, no. Whenever I came in. But then our guest is sitting here listening to all of this, so she will have much to contribute to this.
But we'll get to her.
Yeah, we'll get, hold on, just a second.
Sit down, please.
So, all right, so is it just me? Okay, completely different.
Yeah.
Finally, we're not on the same page. Completely different. Is it just me, or is weather weird? Huh? Okay, we're in the midst of winter right now.
Yeah.
And I mean, how many times a day or a week do we even like, oh my gosh, it's going to snow again. Oh my gosh, it's going up to 50 today. What is it? Oh my gosh, it's down to 20. No one, like, it's winter and no one's happy with it. And I don't really understand this. Like, summer comes along and it's just hot and it really is usually just hot. You may have a cool day where it gets into the 60s and people are like, yeah, I can, you know, have a little jet. It's cooler today. But then the rest of the time, it's just hot in summer and no one says anything. But winter, the slightest change and people go bazooka about it.
We are so far from the same page here. I love winter.
No, but here's the thing. I love snow. And that's why I'm like, is it just me or like, no, like. No, like I love snow and that's what winter is all about, but some people freak out and they're just like, oh, why is it snowing again?
You know,
because it's winter.
There's an old trope about the news, right? And we, you know, we're in the time of cable news 24 hours a day and all of that, but it's not different. It's just more because the old days of it being a newspaper, just the nightly news, those things were so alarmist about the weather at all times. Like if it was normally a 70 degree week and it got down to 50, the weatherman and the newspapers, that was front page news.
Yeah.
Like it the idea of weather affecting humanity is one that sells news.
And I'm not talking about climate change because there are other issues with
it's
that.
I'm
just talking about the normal what weather does anyway. Weather's going to go up and down and be a little wacky.
Yeah.
But I don't mind it so much because when wacky equals snow, I'm a happy man.
Well, plus, like, if it's been, you know, 5 degrees for a week and all of a sudden it's 35, what a day that is.
Shorts.
Jeez Louise, it's so nice.
Yeah. Well, you know what? Speaking of nice.
Yeah?
I think it's time to bring our guest on.
Oh, she must be nice.
Oh, she's super nice.
Well, let's meet her.
Here we go.
Welcome to Why I'll Never Make It.
Yes. Thank you. Thank
you
for coming.
Thank you very much. I'm so happy to be here.
Yes. I mean, you've been listening to us just jabber on and on. And so now you know... You know, you have a lot to contribute now.
Do I?
We've set the bar.
Well, I know why you won't make it.
Did we set the bar?
Let's set the bar at, what's your name?
Aaron.
Aaron, okay.
That's.
So it's now set at Aaron? Is that what you're saying?
So this is Aaron Chronican, and she and I go way back. We've known each other, how many years now?
Well, it's probably 7 or 8 years.
Now.
Yeah.
Yeah. But she and I have worked together. We've also just kind of hung out. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, we know each other professionally and personally.
Yeah. So Aaron and I also know each other from way back. Earlier, she came to my home and there was a camera set up on Patrick and I. Nothing
and
weird.
He put this hat on and I thought, oh, I guess you like Missouri. And...
What you don't know, and if you've noticed a change in Dewey's demeanor, it's because he's wearing a Missouri hat.
Missouri.
It is Missouri. It is still Missouri. It's always been Missouri.
As someone from Alabama, I have to at least make fun of some other state.
Alabama.
Right. So
Alabama.
Right, right.
There it is.
Or thank you. Or as I've said before, oh, where are you from? Alabama. Oh, Alabama? That's what I get all the time.
Oh, my gosh. Really?
Oh, I know. All the time.
Oh.
Yeah, honestly, if people want to call it Missouri, I'm fine with that. Yeah. As long as they reference it, then it's a big win for us.
Yeah, because I've been to St. Louis, love it. Been to Kansas City, loved it.
Whoa.
Yeah.
Hang on. Wow. What was that?
What was what? I said I loved it.
Yeah. And then you did this.
No one.
For those of you at home.
No, don't describe it to them. Tell them how we did it, but then just do the face.
Oh, they were like.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's it. That's exactly right. So now everyone gets it.
Now everyone knows. So all right. So let's get back to Aaron, because believe me, no one wants to hear about us anymore. Mm-hmm. They now want to hear about Aaron, because we brought you on here because you are why I thought you'd be great for the show is because you are a multifaceted performer, person, and also business lady yourself, because you've created your own avenues.
Whoa.
for
more
work
than
in this
one
business.
Facet.
Yeah.
Yes. And so so please tell us about coming to the city and kind of what brought you here and to this world.
To this world, yes. Of New York. Well, I came to the city in 2005 and never thinking I would move to New York, but I had a breakup and I thought, well, I could live with my parents forever after the breakup, or I could, you know, move across the country. I'm from California, which for me, by the way, people go, why did you move?
I think every state has their question or response.
That's
yours.
Pizza is why I moved.
Oh, smart.
Yeah. So good.
Smart. California so pizza good. Kitchen? Blech.
No, it's terrible. No, barbecue sauce on pizza. Stop it. Just stop.
Well, in Tokyo, they put corn on their pizza. So
that's better so there's than that. Pineapple.
Yeah, I understand. But now some people love pineapple.
I
just don't understand it. I don't get it.
Anyway,
broccoli.
And I don't eat pineapple.
Okay. We digress.
That's a whole other show. What doesn't go on pizza?
Yeah, why I'll never make it as a pizza maker.
That's true.
Well, yeah, that'll be the next episode.
Wait, so you came here from California,
yes.
Despite protestations from everyone you've ever met.
Right, exactly.
Okay.
Protestations? Because the other is a denomination.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Protestants.
Right, but you said protestations.
I didn't say protestations.
Is this how it's going to go, guys?
Yeah.
Okay. See,
Aaron,
this is why we brought you in here to actually keep us on track. All right,
I'm
please.
Sitting in between them too, so it's a little bit like watching mommy and daddy fight. It's okay. It's beautiful.
That's real. Oh, it's nice that's kind of held up over these many episodes.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
All right. So you come from California.
Yes.
And then what happened when you got here?
I took the red eye and moved to Astoria. And I had my bags with me and I took the E train because that's what they tell us to do, but it got rerouted to the F line. So I ended up in Roosevelt Island. the first day I moved here in the morning. Oh. So it was 5:45 in the morning. Like no people on that platform.
That's right.
At 63rd and Lexington. And that was before the Q train happened. So I had to go back. It was terrible.
For those of you who may not live in the city listening to this, I mean, I know it's like Chinese. It's like, I don't understand what's going on. But it basically goes to show that our MTA system, our subway system, hasn't changed in years. Since you came here till now, it is still like different subway lines going places you never thought they would go at different times, and you're just trying to get to one place. Mm-hmm. So that's what you experienced at 5:45 in the morning.
It's like if you're on a plane and you're trying to fly from New York to California, and then all of a sudden you're going
in Missouri.
Route. Let's go to Missouri. Yeah, so really good callback. That was lovely. Right? And
yeah.
That's like I didn't sign up for this.
It's like, this isn't the path I wanted. Yeah.
That's exactly how it felt.
So you made it through that early morning kerfuffle.
Right. Yeah. I did. And somehow I stayed in New York. And now I live on the Upper East Side, but not the fancy part. I promise.
The actor part.
Not the actor, right? Or the old money part. I live in the part where I don't have a bathroom in my apartment.
Is it out in the hallway?
It's out in the hallway.
Hang on. So those places exist.
They exist.
Oh, yeah,
for real.
Do.
Yeah. So I have a shower in my kitchen and it's built into the wall. It's not the bathtub thing. And then when I want to use the bathroom, I have to say, I'll be right back. And then I open up my front door, walk down the hallway. It's just my bathroom so I can lock it up so nobody else can use it. But yeah, it's like a water closet.
Who are you saying I'll be right back to your apartment?
Yes, because it misses me so. Look,
is that a signal to the other tenants in the building in which you live?
Hello, I'm gonna be out of my apartment.
I'll be right back. Wink, wink.
You know, sometimes you just want to talk to your apartment.
Sometimes I want to be like Arnold Schwarzenegger.
Nope. Again, we're far away from that.
Over my head.
Nope. He was not my governor.
Nope. No, I was. I'll be back.
Why didn't I catch on to that?
I'll show myself out. It's
yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay. Well, thank you for coming, Aaron. This has been great.
Well, see, I'm not good at accents, so that's why I won't make it. No.
What are you good at? I actually don't know anything about you. Yeah, what do you do? Why are you here?
Because I know why Aaron's here.
Right. You have no idea. Okay. So I have an affliction, which is called starting businesses.
Ooh.
Yeah. So in 2007, I started a career coaching business called The Actors Enterprise, and I teach actors the business. I have a business of teaching the business, and I've been doing that for 10 years, almost 11 years now. Oh my gosh. Yeah. It's crazy. And then in 2009, I started a theater company. And so both of those businesses are running concurrently with my acting business. So I'm a three business owner, essentially, although I technically don't own the theater company because we're nonprofit. So the people own the theater company.
So we basically, Patrick and I own
you
that
own
theater.
My theater company. Yeah, if you pay taxes, then you own my theater company.
If we pay taxes.
Yes, exactly.
Or if you go and see a show, then you're a part of that.
That's true.
Oh, okay.
So tell us about, we'll get into the business second, mm-hmm. but let's start with the theater company.
Yeah.
What was the impetus for starting that, and how was that process?
And what is it? Like, people might actually want to go and see it.
Yeah, please.
The theater is called The Seeing Place, S-E-E-I-N-G, as in seeing with your eyeballs. The name comes from the actual translation of the Greek word for theater.
Oh.
So that means the place we go to see ourselves is what theater means. So The Seeing Place is kind of the phrase that shortens that. And so we started the theater company because we couldn't find any place in New York, it being such a commercial town, where the actors were at the forefront of the storytelling and the art making.
Oh, wow.
Everything is really director-driven or producer-driven or writer-driven. So we wanted an actor-driven and craft-driven place to work.
Okay. Are we talking like sort of Anne Bogart-y type of theater? Like, what do you mean by actor-driven?
So actor-driven meaning that when we do our plays, that we take into consideration what the actor does to bring the character to life, as opposed to what the director needs to do to bring the character to life. So a lot of times the director will decide who the characters are, and then the actor will fulfill upon that. And that's what we call Broadway most of the time. And it's very important that it's the director's vision, because there's a lot of money riding on it. But actors have their own individual stories that we want to tell, and we want to use the craft of acting to do it. And a lot of times no one talks about the craft of acting in rehearsals. They don't want to know how you create what you create. And so you lose that sense of ensemble that you can get when everybody's creating the same way. So if you think about being back in school or any acting classes you've had, there's a special bond with the artists there. And furthermore, I wanted to be a part of making a difference in our community. And so being able to produce theater means I can look at what's going on in the world and then say, you know what? There's this play I know that talks about what we're dealing with, and I get to produce that, and I get to bring my friends in to produce it and perform with me.
And so you've tried to marry the feeling and the idea of acting classes, workshops, and those things where we got to really just delve into, you know, whatever character, be in open space, into an actual like rehearsal performance venue.
Exactly. And so we modeled it on the group theater of the 1930s.
Sure.
That's a craft driven they were a commercial theater company. They did a lot of Broadway stuff. We're a nonprofit, but so we don't make that money. So that's sort of the idea, to keep the integrity of the trained ensemble together.
And just to be clear, this is not improvised material. You use source material. There's like a play that you're performing. Mm-hmm.
And it's almost always going to be a published play from a playwright that's a master playwright, somebody who, you know, has...
like an Arthur Miller or something, yeah.
Or even the modern playwrights like Neil LaBute or, you know, Christopher Shin, Sam Shepard, all mm-hmm. of that. Yeah.
And well, how
he's not living anymore, but that makes me sad.
Yeah.
But he's contemporary.
Yes, contemporary.
Yeah, mm-hmm. yeah, yeah. He certainly wrote about enough important issues. And so with starting this up, what would you say was like the biggest challenge, and what has been the biggest joy or reward of it?
Oh boy. Well, I think the biggest challenge is having enough money to pay the artists what they're worth, which is not happening. I don't know that that would ever happen, because I think the artists are always worth more than we can pay for them. But that's definitely a frustration, because there will always be the allure of some other project out there that can make them more money. And so our ensemble members, it's very hard for us to keep people in the company for any length of time. People leave and come back oftentimes, or they'll take a little hiatus, but that's really frustrating. And I want to be able to honor people's time a little bit more. Also frustrating, surprisingly, not surprising that it's frustrating, but surprising that we deal with this, is that we are a kind of a mid-range theater company. We're not brand new, and we're not well known. So we've been around for 8 years. And so we're kind of dangerous in the minds of playwrights and their agents. So we don't always get the rights to things that we should get the rights to.
Oh, interesting.
So if you're a nobody theater company, or you're doing a one-off, they don't care if you do their play. No one's going to hear about it. It's just for your friends or family.
Yeah.
If you're very well known, then they want you to do their work, because then you're going to get good reviews and their plays will be looked at favorably. If you're in the middle, you run the risk of doing the play not so well. That's what they're afraid of. And therefore tarnishing the name of that playwright, sure, or the play. And so oftentimes they'll say, you know, we would love to give it to you, but we're waiting for someone told us once, we're waiting for a first class theater company to do it.
Ouch.
I said, oh,
wow,
great. Okay. Well, that won't be us right now, I guess. Yeah. Thank you so much. And so that's surprising.
I mean it's interesting, because yes, the playwrights, I think, should exert some control over where their work gets done and how.
Yes.
So I get that, but at the same time, that it's frustrating to have an idea or have an important work you want to present, and yes, then they're not on board with it.
Yeah, so those two artistic things are frustrating, not being able to pay the actors and artistically these plays. And then what makes it worth it is talking to the audiences afterwards. So the plays that we do get to do are often done with, we have a commitment to making sure that anyone can afford to see our shows.
Oh.
So we give away a lot of tickets. We have a very, very low base price. And the people who say, I couldn't see this on Broadway, it was too expensive, or it was all sold out because they were all famous people in it, and yet I was able to see it at your theater, and how happy they were to be exposed to that work. And then also we bring up what we think are important themes that are being talked about in our community. So our theme this season is called the Empathy Initiative. So okay, the idea is that there are all forms of oppression going on in our world right now. And if we can use theater to highlight those and to talk about what might be different if we had more empathy as a society, then we'd get people talking on both sides of whatever fence we're talking about. Mm. And our theater takes a particular pride in not answering the questions, but posing the questions so that everyone can see themselves in the work that we do. It's not just agitprop. It's not just, oh, we're going to do this political piece and we're going to tell you how you're supposed to think and feel.
Right.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
Yeah. And then and so have you found that in doing these more I guess timely current event kind of pieces, because I assume that you do both popular works, mm-hmm, and those that are maybe newer, just less known.
Newer, less known.
And so do you find the same response because it's more thematic than you're going with a popular play and you're just trying to get butts in the seats kind of thing?
Right. And I think that pretty much that it resonates the same way with our audiences, because we will pick plays sometimes that are popular. We just did Macbeth, so you know we've done that. We're not doing like,
wow, sorry. Dewey has a thing about just saying that word. I don't
well,
know.
Well, I waited for a second. You can check the tape. I waited for just a second and then went, I'm not in the theater. I'm okay. I'm all right. But yeah, so
I perform a lot in here.
Yeah, well,
this is true. This is
my living room. This is my theater.
Things blow up. So I will go outside and spin around three times and spit over my shoulder and say a line from Midsummer Night's Dream. I will do it.
See, she's got a.
She knows.
I know.
That's a new one. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. So, but I think that. Excuse me. The most important thing is that we can find a modern relevance. There's no point in us doing a play if we can't say this is something that's going on in society, or that it's not an important time to look back at this, because theater is like a time capsule and we're living historians.
Yeah.
We're able to bring something to life and say this is what it was like back then. So we don't have to make it modern. We just have to make it relevant to a modern audience.
Yeah, that makes sense. So then... Totally switching gears,
yeah.
as you have to do, I assume,
yes,
from day to day, because you'll go from your seeing theater,
yep,
seeing plays,
seeing plays. It's okay. It's a seeing eye. It's a seeing.
I think I've called it the seeing eye before.
Yeah, sure. Everyone does.
I've never called it anything but the seeing place.
Thank you.
Thank you, Dewey.
That.
You know,
that's also the first time I've said it is just then.
Right.
But it's the only thing I've ever called it.
It's incorrect. So
you're one for one. So
I also only speak Greek. So the theater.
So it's theater to you.
Theater, yeah.
Yeah. So in shifting gears, you also get these actors and teach them the business as well, or coach them,
yes,
you know, usher them along.
The business of acting, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. But specifically, what would you say are like the top three things that like you focus on when it comes to the business?
Mm-hmm. Number one would be the type or branding thing. The actors always come in and go, I don't know who I am. And you do.
But I can do everything.
Yeah. I've heard this about you.
Right.
Yes. Yes. And trying to so what I say to that generally is it doesn't matter. So everyone says, I don't want to be put in a box. And I say, yes, you do.
Yeah, you do.
You put everything inside that box, everything that you want to do. That's great. The whole idea is to put a label on the box and have that label be succinct. That's all you have to do is you have to know how to describe it. And you might have to turn the box. You might have different labels. Turn the box a little bit. So for these people, they see this side. The other people see another side. But it's all there, if you want to take that analogy as far as I did.
Yeah.
But that's a big one. Time management is a big one.
Yes.
Just how to balance how do you wake up in the morning and say, I promised myself I would do 3 hours for my acting career today, knowing what you're going to do, and then be able to clock out so that you get to be done. Because most of us, if we don't have the results we want, then we feel like we're never done. And there's that little voice that's nagging us. And of course, we can't work 24 hours a day, so then we just hate ourselves.
Some people can't, yeah. But I get other people's limitations.
Yes, of course, yes.
Well, for the rest of us, do we?
Right. Yeah. Please, okay. You know, there's a lot of people listening to this that aren't me.
Absolutely, absolutely. So...
So then that third thing that people
it is either going to be social media, which a lot of people don't like,
mm-hmm.
Or it's finding a supportive day job.
Yeah. Yeah. Because one promotes you and hopefully gets you more work and the other sustains you while you're looking for that.
Exactly.
Work.
And they both, most people in New York, especially see those as really, especially social media, as pulling away from their daily life. People don't like the idea of having to be on social media and they get really angry at it. And then day jobs, of course, that makes sense that a lot of us would get frustrated. But I feel very strongly that they both are very important for an actor's well-being. And there are ways to do them in your own way. Like having a day job that won't suck your soul is completely possible. I created it for myself. That's what my day job, that's coaching is my supportive day job.
Yeah.
Acting is first. It always has been. And it's completely possible if I can do it. Let me tell you, everyone can do it. Don't take my job. Don't be a career coach. But other than that, you can do everything else.
But I mean, everyone can do it, but not as well as Aaron.
Yeah, great. Of course. Okay. You know, yes. Yeah. And this is why you had me here, right?
Right. Mm-hmm. And so based upon what you heard before,
yes.
let's get into therapy right now.
Oh, gosh.
So based upon what you heard before,
right.
what would your I'm sure people come to you with all kinds of questions that range the gamut. And
yes.
So based upon what you've heard so far, here's what I would say to those.
Which ones?
Oh, okay. Yes. Okay. So you
give me an example.
So you kind of answered the I want to do everything.
Yes.
Right. And so then the other one, because he started talking about about making a difference.
Oh, yes.
And having an impact. And so how would you help someone within their acting career find that contentment, find that purpose?
So what I usually tell people, and this also goes to the wanting to do a lot of different kinds of things, both of the ways that you did it, you talked about it, is you can start to think about what your personal mission is. So think about what you're here to do, not like on the planet, but if you start to look at your behavior, you'll probably find it how you are with your friends, how you are with your family. You'll start to see that you live a role in your life. And if you can start to align all the things that you do with that, I started to notice that my mission seemed to be making people feel empowered. That just seemed to be it. So it makes sense that I run an actor-driven theater company. It makes sense that I get called to do a lot of different producing things. It makes sense that I am a career coach and I really deal 100% in empowerment. That's pretty much what I teach.
Yeah.
So that allows somebody to get to the core of what matters to them, and then they can start to see, how might I go about doing that? That's also part of the career coaching. But
yeah. And so with both of these, both the theater company and your coaching business, they do seem others driven.
Yes.
And so what is it that Aaron wants to do?
I drink bourbon. right?
Because it often is easier. I just cracked on there because I'm so but yeah, it's often easier to see, you know, other people. It's like, oh, well, just step one, step two, here's what
you do. Let's be honest though, this is all for me. Because I have a theater company so that I can do work in the theater.
Right, because you cast yourself.
Because I get to cast myself. Why wouldn't I do that? As long as I'm making a difference for other people while I'm doing it, then what the heck? Same thing with career coaching. I get some money for that. So that's really great. So it's
In addition, you're coaching other people, but they're bringing to you problems that you probably find in yourself.
Absolutely.
Then it's preaching to the choir, by the way, is important.
Yes.
Because a choir is filled with like derelicts. So preach to the choir, it out loud.
Right.
Yeah. You know, I have conversations with friends all the time where I'm saying something to them that I feel like is like really imparting some wisdom on them. But as I say it out loud, I'm like, what? That's great.
Yeah.
I should do that.
Yes.
I need to do
Why don't that, I do so. That?
Well, definitely. People inspire me like crazy. And so if I'm coaching somebody and on their Broadway auditions, I'm like, I should probably be going to some of those too, or, you know, whatever. You do need to. I think that one of the niches that I fulfill is that I'm one of few career coaches. There are plenty of coaches out there that are acting coaches, but the career coaches, not many of them are actors. Most of them come from the casting world, or they they were agents, or they were directors. And they have, or they're managers.
You know, I didn't go with your company. I think you guys may not have been around when I did this, but I went through a career coaching years ago now, and I got two pieces of advice from that I cannot stop thinking about.
Well, that's awesome.
One of is go through the three P's when a project is presented to you.
Uh-huh.
It's the people, the project, or the pay.
Uh-huh. Exactly.
And if you get two of those three, then you can really seriously consider it. If you only get one or none, then just say no.
Exactly.
And it's the project being the part, like, do you want to do this show? Mm-hmm. The people, are the people like going to be valuable for you in your career? And is the money enough?
Right.
And like just breaking it down into those three simple things makes it really easy to say no to people. Because it doesn't have to be personal anymore. It doesn't have to be just a favor to someone. It can be like, listen, I'm not in a position where I can help out with this right now because you don't have these three things.
Right.
That's one. And then the other one is choose. So if it's a matter of I want to be a commercial actor or a film actor or a theater actor, if it's a matter of I only want to work in the city, if it's a matter of I only want to do straight plays, choose. Choose and be wrong.
Right.
But choose. Focus on that thing. Because guess what? Whatever the part is that you think you're right for now, which is all of them, Patrick.
Yeah. Right.
Yes. All the parts.
Yeah, all things.
Those parts will be there next year or the year after that. Not that exact project, but another
Until
company will
get
be doing
old.
Them. Well, he's already old. They conceptually,
it's why I love
though,
the dad jokes, I guess. I love them.
Conceptually, choosing a path to focus on will allow you to then perfect and hone that path. Mm-hmm. And also, you're not failing then to get every role every time.
Right.
Right? It's debilitating to be in your position. Patrick, I'm pointing to Patrick. It's debilitating to walk into an audition, know that you could play each one of those roles, which I, look, just for the sake of the producer, I should be playing each one of those roles. But it's a debilitating thing because I will not book. Mm-hmm. But for the most part, I won't book any of those roles.
Right, right.
But it would be really, it would be a whole lot easier to only lose out on the one. Mm-hmm. And then to not have six other projects that day that I also lost out on. But because I focused on that one, I wanted that one, I tried for that one. I didn't try for these others. I tried for that one. Not booking that one, that's okay. Because then I'm going to focus on the next one the following day or the following week. That's a far easier way to lose. And, you know, because yes. It's a numbers game. You got to do it over and over and over again to get the job, to get to find the project that lines up with the thing that you are. But ultimately, like, if it's everything in front of you, that's like, that's no way to manage your time.
No, it's really hard. And that's to get to the point of somebody who wants to do a lot of different kinds of things, not roles, but
Kilimanjaro.
Kilimanjaro, right, exactly. It's just, I always tell people, you can have infinite passion. You can be passionate about as many things as you want. People always say, if you could see yourself doing anything else, don't act. Do you want to get out of it? Right. But I say, if you can't see yourself acting anymore, then definitely get out. But if you think I have to act, then do that. But you do have finite time, energy, money. So yeah. Your personal capital, you can run out of. And so you have to start to balance your time with what's going to be most important. So I don't produce projects unless they pay me a lot of money. I won't produce a project unless I'm in it. Because it's just not worth the time, just like you said with the three Ps. You can do that with the other areas of your life as well.
Yeah.
Wow. Well, This has been, it feels like my own therapy session today.
Yes. I've been
it's been great. Well, Aaron, what is coming up next for you for the theater company or for yourself that
you're
working on?
For myself, right now I am, because I love to be busy, evidently, I am personally understudying two off-Broadway musicals. They happen to be run by the same producer in the same space, so it's very easy for me to cover both of those if I need to,
like on the same day. Would that ever happen?
That has happened, yes.
Oh
yes, because they're two, they do run on the same day. It's at St. Luke's, which has a bunch of different shows going throughout the week.
Sure.
So I'm going on tonight, actually, right after this. That's what I have to run off to. And so I'm doing that. And then my theater company is doing three shows in rep.
Whoa.
And that will be happening in April and May. Wow. And I can announce it here, everyone.
Yeah.
We are doing a new, brand spanking new, that we are writing, adaptation of Antigone called The People versus Antigone.
Wow.
We're also doing a one-person show, I Am My Own Wife. And we're also doing the one-person show, My Name is Rachel Corey. And all three of those are going to be appearing under a header that we are creating called the Whistleblower Series.
Excellent.
Which is all about these female, or there's one trans character, who are really whistleblowers with what's going on in their life. And to not such a good effect for themselves personally, and though it makes a very big change in the world. And we're trying to explore the activism and how, even if we look at what happened with this recent issue with the actor who was being coercive in this date that he was on, Aziz Ansari.
Right.
Okay,
right.
So there's the argument on both sides about whether it was whether she's a whistleblower, is she not? Is she a victim? Is she not a victim? Is she doing something really bad because she came forward? Is she not? And I think that's where our society always is. We're going to vilify someone, and we want to explore how the activist is often vilified, and if that's a good thing for society to do. Is it a bad thing for society to do? And each of these three stories explore that in some way.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so
I mean, it sounds like quite a hefty project.
It's going to be amazing
to do all three at once.
It's
a great what a great concept for what you were talking about. Your theater company is earlier, which is to pose the question, not to answer the question.
Exactly.
There's a lot of people answering that question right now.
Yes.
With the Aziz Ansari
story. Yes. There's so many answers.
There really are, and so I hesitated to bring it up, but it was just I think it's that is so polarizing.
Yeah.
When in you've got this the Me Too movement and the Women's March that's happening. And these things, there's clearly for some people you would see a right side and a wrong side, and with that particular story, it is murky.
I've been talking with other friends about it and how it really is like you can kind of see how they both messed up. They both kind of have their own sides to it. And so there are others where it's like completely okay. Weinstein's just a creep and he needs to go bye-bye.
Exactly, and that's easy.
That one's easy. But then with this one, it's like, oh, but like you're kind of uncomfortable for both of them.
Yes.
But I think in some way.
But I think again, to go back to what you guys are trying to do with seeing Place, is to pose questions in almost that same way, not on social media per se, but in the real world, in front of people sitting in a theater. What a neat concept to bring a question like that to them to. Not just impose a viewpoint.
Right.
And I think sometimes it's, especially in theater, it's hard to find a murky question.
Yes, it is.
Because oftentimes...
It's hard to find a play that lets it stay murky.
That's what I mean. The playwright...
They want to...
Well, that's a human being writing a story from their vantage point. That absolutely is their right to have an opinion. Why else would they write the piece?
Right.
And to find pieces out there that really do live in that murky place is what a compelling night.
It should be. And so it's a lot. It's a lot to take on. But I'm excited, and you know, I have thankfully good time management skills somehow to be able to do this.
We'll let people know where you can find about you and also the shows coming up.
Sure. So you can find out about everything that I'm doing and pretty much links to everywhere else on my personal website, which is aaronkronican.com. It's C-R-O-N-I-C-A-N-E-R-I-N. I did it backwards. Why did I do that? Because I figured my last name was harder, but not really.
Aaron first, Chronican second.
Yes.
AaronChronican.com.
Yes. And so that's where everything lives. And then it's the Scene Place Theater and the Actors Enterprise
And you can click on both of those on your website.
Heck yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh my goodness. This has been great. Thank you so much for joining us.
You're welcome. Thanks for having me.
Yeah. Seriously. This is a really cool perspective. You know, I think Patrick and I are both performers. And almost exclusively performers. I mean, I think we have other facets to our life as well, but
like Kilimanjaro.
Eventually. Yeah. But it's really nice to expand, to broaden what it is that we're talking about with all that it is that you do, including performing.
Right. Well, and I have to just pipe in here at the end that the reason that I'm not going to make it is because I really didn't talk about my acting career at all here. What is wrong with me?
I was trying to get us into that.
Were, and I was like, no, sir. It's like,
no, my theater company.
But like what I do for everyone else is really that much
more. No, but you're understudying two off-Broadway
shows. And I am starring in, we'll be doing My Name is Rachel Corey. I'll be performing in that. It's a one-person show. Oh my gosh, that's a lot of lines.
Yeah, so I assume 90 minutes.
It's about that. Yeah,
of just nothing but you talking.
Nothing but me talking.
Yeah. I've never done a one person show, so the mere thought of it.
I've enjoyed
this 40 minutes of you talking, so I imagine adding another 52 would just sound great.
Everyone. Exactly. But yeah, that's why I'm not going to make it. Absolutely not gonna.
Well, you know what? We hope that your other endeavors do make it.
Oh, yes. Then I'll have money to fund my theater habit.
Perfect. Perfect. All right. Well, thank you again, Aaron, for joining us. Dewey, I think we did it again.
What did we do again?
We knocked it out of the park. That's what we did.
Baseball references.
All right. We will see you. Well, we'll. No, you'll hear us. I don't even know how to say goodbye. You'll hear us, and we'll talk to you next time.
This poor enunciation is a nice footnote to how we started.
Da-da-da-da. I don't know what I'm saying.
Bye, everybody.
Adios. The Why I'll Never Make It podcast is hosted by Dewey Cadell and Patrick Oliver Jones and produced by Dylan Adams.
Subscribe to this podcast on iTunes, SoundCloud, or Stitcher, where you can leave us amazing reviews, of course.
You can also connect with us on Facebook and Instagram at Why'll Never Make It, or via email at whyillnevermakeit@gmail.com.
Lastly, we now have a website, whyillnevermakeit.com.
You know, Dewey, it certainly sounds like we're making it.
I'm not making it. I'll never make it.